Well, yep, still morning. Good morning, everybody. I think first I'd like to thank Alec for the first class British Airways ticket and the stay at the Intercontinental Hotel. I'm joking, of course. I'm here of my own accord. It's interesting. I was looking at this whole thing with the WhatsApp group, and I was going to exit the group because, generally speaking, I don't do WhatsApp groups. And the reason for that is quite simple. It's one of the best intelligence gathering tools around. Now, I know for a fact that we've got somebody here from Santa Ana in the United States. I know we've got somebody else here from Paris who's on a Vodafone contract. We can dig and scratch. I could, if I had the time, tell you about each and every one of you just from looking at your telephone number and running it, first on Truecaller to get your name, and next to run it on a database that we have access to that will pretty much tell us who you are and what you do. And that is quite a worry today because lots of people don't understand the risk of being on a WhatsApp group. I'm not suggesting for one moment that you should abandon it, but the police in South Africa, here's another interesting thing. I have a subscription to Truecaller. Have you heard of Truecaller? It enables you to say who a phone number belongs to or who it's registered to. If you look my number up and it's not already in your phone, it'll come out as Rumpelstiltskin because I've fixed Truecaller that if anybody runs my number, it comes out as Rumpelstiltskin. Now, I've manipulated it that way. You can't all do that, but I have done it. And it puzzles people that try to figure out who I am when they've seen my number somewhere. But because I have a paid subscription, I can also click on the bar that when I look somebody up on Truecaller, I don't leave a footprint. There's no way of seeing that I've looked them up on Truecaller. Now, that's a problem because the police in South Africa cannot use Truecaller. And the reason they can't use it is because the state will not fund a subscription, which is 700 rand a year. So for 700 rand a year, a policeman cannot use Truecaller because if he does use it, the person he's looking at, who may be a criminal, now knows who it was that was looking at him. So that's some of the complexities we have. So today, I'm not sure which of these buttons I press. Is it the red button? Okay, well, if I press the green button, what will happen, do you think? So today, I'm going to have a little discussion about okay, so it's not the red button. Let's try that one. Okay, here we go. So we'll have a little discussion about whether or not, what were we talking about again? Oh, yes. Will South Africa still be a great country to live in 2025? Well, that's a big question, isn't it? And the answer, if you look at the street polls in Joburg, and I only arrived on Sunday morning, if you look at the street polls in Joburg, there's no doubt that Action SA will fix it. DA will fix it. Freedom Front will fix South Africa. All these parties have promised that they will fix South Africa. But you're just left wondering which of them is actually going to fix it. 30 years of freedom. Now, we've had, without a doubt, 30 years of freedom for the people of South Africa. When I talk about the people of South Africa, I talk about myself as well. I can remember in the 80s going to Kruger Park and taking a friend of mine who was black to Kruger Park. And in order to pull it off, I had to let him drive the car. And I had to tell the police at the roadblocks that he was my driver. Otherwise, you know, there would have been issues. So today you can go to Kruger Park if you have a friend who's black without worrying about anybody saying anything about who's in the car with you. But what have we achieved in that 30 years? The ANC have said that it's been 30 glorious years. That was in their manifesto. They've talked about housing, healthcare, roads, education, water, electricity, all these things, not to mention SAA and the ports. They've stuffed up the ports completely. You now have demurrage charges at the South African ports, which are amongst the highest in the world, because ships arrive and they park outside and they can't get in. So all these charges are passed on. The roads, I often refer to Mpumalanga as the pothole province. And the sad part about it is when a minibus hits one of those potholes and turns over and 10 people are killed, the government will send the MEC for transport to the funeral to give their condolences. What they haven't realized is that he will arrive at that funeral in a car bought with the money that was should have been used for fixing the pothole. The same goes with education. It's a complete mess. Water, electricity. I mean, anybody, I don't know if there's anybody here that's living in South Africa at the moment. Do we hear? So you know the story about electricity. We'll come back to that in a moment. You'll be quite surprised at what's going on there. And healthcare, of course, a complete shambles. I remember in the late 70s, I slipped and fell and I broke my arm. It was the elbow. And I went to Joburg General Hospital and I paid 8 rand. And they x-rayed me and put a plaster cast on and I was fixed and it was instantaneous. Of course, things have changed since then. Joburg Gen in those days was a whites-only hospital. Now it's mostly working-class people that go to that hospital. And if you go there with a broken arm today, you're going to be kept waiting for a very long time. I thought it would be interesting to have a look at the commissioners of police that we've had in South Africa. And it's quite strange because after George Fivers, we've not really had anybody that's gone the distance. So we've had 30 years without a police commissioner that's gone the distance. And I mean, it's a shocking. I think I'm not going to read all that out to you. You guys have got eyes. You can look at it. That is a fact of life. The last on the list is a chap called Masemola. Now, what's interesting, Cyril and I don't talk anymore. We used to be friends. But since he became president, it's been harder and harder to have a discussion with him, and now I don't talk to him at all. Because in March 2022, his right-hand man, a fellow called Bajani Chauki, asked me, Paul, Cyril wants, he's got a list of all the people that he wants to appoint somebody from that list as the next chief of police. He said, can you vet them? Now, we've got an intelligence service in South Africa, but apparently for the president to ask the intelligence service to vet somebody, it doesn't really work. So I was asked to vet them, and we did a lifestyle analysis on all of them. There were 8 people on the list, and there were only 2 people out of that list of 8. There were only 2 people that we considered to be competent. In other words, they had the necessary skills. And secondly, that they either were not living beyond their means or were not involved in external activities. Masemola was listed as living beyond his means, significantly living beyond his means. He was having revolving door credit. Do you know what that is? It's when you pay, you borrow money from bank A to pay back bank B, and then you borrow money from bank C to pay back. And each time the value of the loans was going up. So clearly, this man wasn't able to live. But more importantly, Masemola had a checkered history while he was a lieutenant general in the police, that he'd signed off on cars which were overpriced. The whole thing just stank. The whole tender just stank. And more importantly, he visited, I think it was Paris, on a police junket and came back with a Louis Vuitton bag for his wife, which was given to him by a police supplier. So you can work out that sort of person is not fit for the purpose. So despite me indicating that he wasn't fit for purpose, along with 5 other people on the 8-person list, Cyril went and appointed him. And when I inquired as to why he was appointed, I was told, well, it was kind of out of his hands, really. Then I thought, well, why ask me in the first place? Because all they did was give me the opportunity to provide evidence as to why he shouldn't be appointed. Now, we talk about the police lineup. That's what a police lineup should look like today. It was only, in fact, I think it's tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow, the Deputy Commissioner of Police for the Northwest Province, a general, a major general, he has to appear in court for fraud because it was found that he was abusing the police helicopters in the Northwest. And what he was doing was using the police helicopters in the Northwest for things which police helicopters are not intended for, to get from A to B, and then the helicopter would be sat waiting around, and then to go back from B to A. And the sad part about it, for the same journey, he billed on his car allowance, he billed the kilometers on his car allowance, which meant it was a double bubble. Firstly, he was using the helicopters fraudulently, and secondly, he was claiming the mileage. He's in court tomorrow for that. If you look at what happened to the rand, when I arrived in South Africa, it was 1 rand 35 to the pound. 1 rand 35. And I was very lucky because I got a thing called Finrand. I don't know if there's anybody who can remember Finrand. So does anybody know what Finrand was? Okay, it was an investment mechanism by the apartheid government. If you brought money in, foreign money in, and you invested it in South Africa, for every 1 rand 35 that I brought in, I was given another rand. So it was an amazing increase in the value of my pounds that I brought in. And I brought quite a few pounds into South Africa because I was a property investor, still am, although I'm divesting now in South Africa. And I brought money in and I bought buildings downtown. Everyone said, you must be mad. But I bought buildings downtown and I bought other land in different places. And, yeah, you know, you win some, you lose some. But let's have a look. I bought a house in Houghton. And I had no cash in South Africa. So I brought £750,000 in from the UK in 2019 to buy a house in Houghton, which was 12 million rand. Now, at that time, £750,000 was approximately 15 million rand. When it was converted, it was 14,800,000 rand. So I had 14,800,000 rand. And I bought this house for 12 million. And then the day the transfer went through was the day Cyril lectured everybody on the news and told that from tomorrow, everybody's going to be in lockdown. And we were in lockdown for 5 months. I couldn't start my planning process. My plan was to demolish the house and to build 7 luxury townhouses there, clusters. And because of the delay with COVID, what should have taken 6 or 8 months ended up taking 3 years. So by 2023, I had my planning permission. I then spoke to a local estate agent and I considered the whole thing. And frankly, it's not worth doing. The market has gone flat. The bottom has dropped out of the housing market in South Africa completely. It's worse than the UK. And I've got some stories I can tell you about the UK property market in recent years. So I thought to myself, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to sell the house and repatriate the money, which I can do because it was brought in through the Reserve Bank. I'm not one of these guys that carries it in suitcases on the plane. So the bad news is that my original exchange rate, which was just under 20 rand to the pound, when I sell the house, I'm going to be taking that money back out at 24 rand to the pound. And the worst news still is that the house I paid 12 million for, plus 1.5 million rand for the planning permission and the drawings, and you've got this nasty little company called JCI, who claims to be the township owner of Houghton, and they demand 20,000 rand for every additional house that you're going to build, and I've paid them off. And then I decided I'm not proceeding with the project. It's on the market. It's been on the market for 6 months now. I've been dropping it at 250,000 rand a month to move the house. I currently have it at 9 million rand and no buyers. So that's just giving you an idea of what can happen when you have a corrupt government. And if you look at the value of the rent of the pound, 5 rand 13 when the election took place in 1994, and look at it today, 24.17. And then you get messages like this. You get, if you're an Eskom subscriber, which I am on a number of my properties, I get a message like this, telling me that we've had 41 days without load shedding and we should celebrate. But what we don't realize is they're spending 2 billion rand a month on diesel to keep the lights on. And if you think they can afford to spend 2 billion rand a month on diesel after the elections, you've got another shock coming. So my prediction is that within a week or two of the elections, the lights will be off again. This is interesting. That's the Vaal River. That is a photograph of the Vaal River. The one on the right I took from my plane as I was flying over. The river has gone green. And that lettuce, or whatever you want to call it, is caused by the volumes of sewage which are being poured into the Vaal River. Now, if you think that's bad, does anybody here know anything about the UK? Do you know what the largest freshwater lake is in the UK? Anybody know? Loch Ness. Loch Ness in Northern Ireland. You're quite right, sir. Now, Loch Ness in Northern Ireland looks just like that. They've said it will take them at least 30 years to clear all that lettuce. And that's the biggest drinking water supply in the United Kingdom. And it's polluted to hell and back. And it's not sewage, it's the farmers around the lake that have used nitrates to, what do you call it, when you put stuff on the ground to make stuff grow. Yes, you know? So the farmers, the rain, it's washed it in, now the lake is full of nitrates. They said it's going to take them 10 years to educate the farmers and 20 years to clear the lettuce. That's an interesting future we have. The Vaal River, if they fix the sewage, the next rain season, the next rain season, the lettuce will be gone. So Loch Ness has a significant problem. I just saw that. I can't remember, Shapiro or one of those cartoonists. I saw that and I thought, well, that's an interesting one. The election manifesto of the ANC. Believe it or not, there are people that want to vote for the ANC. Now, I used to vote for the ANC. When I cast my first vote, I was a policeman then, in 1994, and I helped police the elections, and we had special votes. We voted before the election so that we were free to manage the election itself. And on what started off as a one-day election became a 2 days of election because the queues were still there when the election voting halls closed in the evening. So they said, okay, we'll run it for another day. And I voted for the ANC then. And the next election, 99, I voted for the ANC. And that was the last time I voted for the ANC. And the reason it's the last time I voted for the ANC is because they've become untrustworthy. Now, when a political party becomes untrustworthy, when they're lying, but the sad part about it is some of the lies are believable by people who are uneducated. Now, our housekeeper, who is a well-paid housekeeper, we pay, and I'm not bragging or anything like that. I just don't see the purpose of paying somebody peanuts. So our housekeeper, who works 5 days a week from 9 till 3, that's a 6-hour day, she gets paid 12,000 rand a month. And we help her out with all sorts of problems, which one does. And I sat her down last week and I said, look, the elections are coming. Who are you going to vote for? She said, oh, no, I'm going to vote for the ANC. I said, but can't you see what's going on in this country? She said, yes, I can. But if I don't vote for the ANC, they will know about it. And I said, but your vote is secret. How will they know about it? She said, well, we all know that they know who you vote for. Now, they've been able to pass that on to the uneducated people, and they believe that if they don't vote for the ANC, they'll be in trouble. Of course, South Africa is in a state. I've got different passports. I can live in Australia. I've got Australian citizenship. I can live in the UK. I've got a British passport. I've got an Irish passport. And I have a green card. I can go and live in America. I choose to live in Johannesburg. Sandton is my veik. It's my home. It's been for a long, long time. And the good news is something can be done about it. Because in the elections that are coming up now, people will have an opportunity to vote. And hopefully, those of you that are living in the UK, you've registered to vote, and you will vote at the embassy on, is it this Saturday, I think? Is it this Saturday? Yeah, perfect. Pardon? Sorry? Well, let's hope, you know, a good chunk of those. Of course, you'll only be voting in the national elections. You can't vote in the provincial elections. But let's hope a good chunk of that 24,000 people. If you want to put that into reality, I think I worked it out at the last elections. It was 85,000 votes equals one seat, you know, based on the number of people that voted. So if you take the number of people that voted and you divide it by the number of seats, that's what you end up with, you know. Pardon? Right. Okay, well, let's wait and see what happens. So I've persuaded my housekeeper not to vote because I decided that would be the best thing. That would be the same as a vote wasted. So I will definitely be voting. But what will happen? Everybody's been saying, oh, the ANC will only get 40%. They'll get 41%, 42%. Who knows what percentage they'll get? Supposing they get 49% or 48%, then all they need is a couple of rats and mice. I hope they get at least 49% for two reasons. One, it will teach them a lesson. And two, it will prevent them having to go and do a deal with the devil. Because a deal with the devil, and this is an estimate, the little goodie on the right-hand side, the badge sizes are an estimate. So the ANC is the biggest badge. The DA is next. Action SA is going to, according to the predictions, swipe a lot of votes. EFF, IFP, hopefully the ANC will end up doing a deal with one of the little parties and not doing a deal with the EFF. Because I can tell you now, if the ANC do a deal with the EFF, the future of South Africa will be very bleak indeed. One only has to look at what happened in Johannesburg, where in order to take control of Johannesburg, they did a deal with, what's the name of that fella that eats off the sushi off the... I can't remember his name, but...
Al-Jama'a.
Yes. So look what happens. We are losing police, nurses, doctors, teachers, engineers, IT experts. I mentioned about this story in Perth. And the reality of it is I was in Perth 2 weeks ago. And I was chatting to a traffic cop there whose name was Fanamerva. And guess where he was from? Boksburg. So they are recruiting. The agencies are recruiting every type of skill that they can recruit. Nurses. You'll find South African nurses in the hospitals here in the UK and Ireland and Europe. So you want to know if SA will still be a great country in 2025? I'm saying it depends on the election outcome. It can be a good country or it can go, we can have 5 years of chaos. When I finish, I just want to say one thing. by the way, this building you're in today, where we are sitting right now, 80 years ago, sitting where you are right now, were the military from the US, the Allies, the US, the French, the British. They were all sitting in this very room right here, planning Operation Overlord, which takes place or would have taken place 80 years ago in 3 weeks' time. And they were sitting in this room planning Operation Overlord. So if you want to turn the clock back a bit further, in 1945, Frank Whittle was standing where Alec is right now, demonstrating to everybody the jet engine and how it worked. And if you want to go back a bit further than that, tomorrow it'll be 125 days since the building was open. The building opened 125 years ago tomorrow, on the 16th of May. 1899, this building opened. Before that, and it's why it's called Birdcage Walk, James I kept his birds in cages on both sides of the road here. Thank you.